Remember Willie? I think Willie. Remember my, the Hulk, when the Hulk used to get angry and go green and whatever. I thought, so Willie's going to do his veins are going to pop out his neck when the referee give the penalty, you know. So.
Hello and welcome to SI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tin. I'm your host, Ian Stephen. And for today's episode, we meet a Mason who was the focus of a cup final and he didn't award a penalty to Rangers. From the building sites in the North of Netherlands to constructing cup success as a Hampden hero and a swift sojourn into agricultural heavy machinery to become a tractor boy, it's Paul Mason. Paul, how are you?
I'm very good, very good.
It's an absolute pleasure to meet you. I have to say, a hero for me when I was growing up as a young Aberdeen fan. But let's talk about you growing up. Where were you born and brought up?
I was born in Liverpool 7, Kensington. I think it's a rough part of Liverpool now. In the older days, it was a nice part of the world to grow up in.
And you were talented as a young footballer, but you found it difficult to stick on for a team in Merseyside as a youth?
Yeah, well, I played for Liverpool school boys all the way through the school ages, which is a feat in itself. And I think when I got to 16, you get to schoolboy forms. You can go to, you can go to a professional football club on YTS or whatever. And obviously you supported Everton. Everton came knocking on the door. So I eventually went to Everton. Although a lot of other clubs came in to inquire about me. But Everton was the team I chose when I was 16. But I think I had about 6 months at Everton. I wasn't ready to be a footballer at 16 years of age, so I didn't train very well, didn't go. I don't think I was arrogant or anything like that. I just wasn't ready for it at 16. And as you look back on your life now, you can look back and see what happened and whatever. Eventually, I left home at 19, and I think then I was ready to knuckle down and start trying to earn a living properly, you know. But at 16, I wasn't ready.
Well, you didn't just kind of leave home. You really left home. Because you picked up an injury when you were a teenager, looked like football wasn't going to be the kind of thing for you. So where did you end up going?
Yeah, well, I was 18 at the time. I was playing, representing the West Cheshire League. I was playing for an amateur team, a team called Port Sunlight. And we were playing down in Devon. And I broke my leg playing in a semi-final of a cup. Obviously, I was out for 6-9 months. The job I had at the time was on a building site. I lost that job as well, obviously. And it gives you a bit of time to think, 6 months, 7-8 months with the plaster and thinking what's next in your career, in your life. Basically, work was the main thing because in the 80s, there wasn't much work going. And at the time, when I broke my leg, as I say, I just I got thinking. My brother lived in Spain at the time. I thought I might go and join him over there and see what he's doing and maybe get a job with him. And just near the time, I was ready to make the move. He'd moved to Holland. So when I was 19... and my leg had got better, I took the step and went to live in Holland, joined him in Holland.
And it was to be effectively somebody that was gainfully employed. It wasn't a kind of football move, was it?
No, I basically went to, he was called a lagger, like insulation, pipe insulation. That's what they're doing over there. They, like in the north of Holland, they work in Germany as well at the time, doing a lot of travelling, but I thought it can't be that hard to learn, you know. So I'm not the best DIY, well, in other words, I'm hopeless DIY, but I thought you can put your mind so you can learn that. That was the idea when I went over. And also when I went over there, obviously, I still like to play football. I was fit by then. I just wanted to play for a local team. A few Scottish guys over there, a few Welsh, a few English, sort of all people looking for work. The team I joined in the end was like a third-class amateur team, but it was quite serious, which is good, but I just started playing for them. And then after 3 or 4 months, someone said, the team where you live in Groningen, had interest in signing you. So that's how that came about.
And what's different about the Dutch setup to what you were used to with the kind of English football growing up?
Well, I think the Dutch, it's just what I learned after eventually when I went to Aberdeen as well. It's more of a slow build-up in Holland, you know. They're more technical gifted. It's all technical. Ability and whatever, you know, all about power and pace, and they cherish the ball. I thought it was great. It was very slow at the back in the midfield. Gets a final third, it got a bit quicker, but it was just different pace of football altogether.
And what position were you playing at that point?
When I went over to in the amateur team, I was playing like midfield. So when I went to Groningen in the reserves for a year, I was playing midfield all the time. Then I think a year in the reserves, it's like a trial year. And I remember being over there. So it's getting to March time. So you know this is make or break time. So I thought, oh, I'm a bit worried because you don't know if you're doing well yourself. You think you are, but you don't not sure. I remember going to a cafe with the reserve team, and I couldn't speak Dutch at the time, so I was very limited. But I heard the guy in the cafe asking our manager who's got a chance of getting kept on, and he mentioned two lads' names, which is my friend Jopie Hall and Harrishausen, and then the third one getting kept on is the Englishman Paul Mason. So I remember thinking that day, wow, I think I'm going to get to the first team, you know. So it was great relief, a great moment for me, and progress from there.
And that Groningen team, there were some good players in that squad. Adri van Tichelen was there, Peter Hoister was there at the same time.
Yeah. Aaron Koeman. Well, the Koemans, Ronald Koeman just left the year I got there. He went to Ajax at the time. But the Koemans, like, they're from the city themselves. Some good players. John Le Wolf, internationals, René Agerkamp, Jan van Dijk. Good team.
And there's some talented players in the Dutch league at that point as well, because Wouters was still there, Van Basten, Rijkaard, you mentioned Koeman, Eric Gerets, Van der Kerkhoff, Vandenberg. These players had still yet to kind of peak in that 1988. So were you playing against some of these great names?
Well, that's funny, I've just been over to Holland, and I've got a little thing on my WhatsApp, Team of the Year, and it's all the household names. You've got Gullit, Van Basten from Ajax, Rijkaard, Wouters, Koeman, Winter, and I was right back. I was amongst all them in the best team of the season, like going by the marshy in the local paper, you know. So that was something. That's some team. So that's something I cherish.
I think you're going to have to send that on to us so we can show it off. But there must have been interest from other clubs in Holland.
I was so happy over there, just living over there, because it wasn't about money at all. Because after not, you know, going there looking for work, next thing you know, you're playing football for a living. And then I changed as a person. I thought, okay, I must have ability, but you need something else to go with it, not just ability. And I just changed as a person. I just thought, head down, work hard and what have you. Don't cause any trouble with it, because I was scared anything happened, you know, you could be on your way or whatever. And that's the mentality I had. Just work hard and good.
Well, I've kind of heard a particular story about how the move to Aberdeen came about, and it kind of stems from Aberdeen wanting to replace Jim Leighton. They'd had a tip-off about Teo Snelldoors, and they'll come over to watch him, and you happen to play at the same time. Is that correct, or is there a bit more to how Aberdeen scouted you and brought you across?
No, that was correct, yeah. Alex Smith was overwatching Theo at the time, and it was the last game of the season. It's for the playoff, actually, for Europe. And I think we needed a point, and we actually managed to qualify for Europe. But Alex Smith was overwatching Theo, and Theo was injured that day, so he wasn't playing. So I think the Dutch agent, who Theo had, I also knew him, and he must have told Alex Smith, the right back here. I think they want to try and cash in on him, because I was happy at Groningen, to be honest with you. And just about 6 months before the end of the season, the manager said, Paul, if someone comes in for you, we'll let you go. So maybe think they wanted to cash in or something, you know. But I was very happy. I thought I was going to spend my whole career in Holland. I was very happy. But then this happened. And Alex Smith tells me a story about when he came over. Apparently, Alex Ferguson had said to Alex Smith, have a look at the right back for me for Groningen, because apparently Alex Ferguson was interested as well. So Alex Smith told me the story a while back. Obviously, he's watching Theo wasn't there, and he decided to let me come over for 2 weeks. Didn't sign me right away. It was a 2 week sort of trial period. Well, I don't know what was trial about it, because when I got up to Aberdeen, all you're doing is running around the park in pre-season, you know. So didn't see me playing much football, but he decided to sign me. So what he said to Alex Ferguson, why didn't I say anything about? I think what he said to Alex Ferguson, he said something about it. He's too small, be a right back in the Premier League. So that's what he said. So and Alex Smith actually took himself. So that was it.
Well, what did you know about Aberdeen at that point?
Well, I knew they were near Cup in 83. A young lad growing up in Liverpool, obviously watching every bit of football you can see. It's a big occasion, yeah. So the household name, household club, won the European Cup, Cup in this Cup. you know it's a big club, you know. So you don't think twice when you think they come. You're going to do you want to sign? You just don't think twice at all.
And it wasn't just Alex Smith that was manager at that point, because Jockey Smith was in a kind of strange position of being co-manager with him.
Jockey Scott.
How did that dynamic work?
It worked very well, yeah. I don't know who did what at first, you know. But yeah, Jockey was doing all the coaching, what have you. Drew Jarvie as well. Great coach, by the way, Jockey Scott, the best ever, you know. Didn't miss a thing. Alex Smith did all the press and what have you. So it worked really well.
And you joined at the same time as Snelders. Was there a kind of immediate bond between the two of you because you both came across from the Airy Division?
Yeah, I think we got on because we were both in the same hotel as well for 3 months. And our wives at the time were stuck together, whatever. Yeah. And then the way it transpired, 3 or 4 months after being there, we were looking for housing together. We look in different places, obviously, but it's the same day. We got a house in the same road, so we end up being another 4 or 5 years together, you know. So,
well, there's some strong characters in that squad. You guys like Miller, McLeish, Bett, Nicholas. Was it easy to assimilate in? Were you made welcome?
I found it the first year was hard because you're not a household name, and you just want to play, but you're not playing the first year, well, the first months. But I remember walking in the change room the first day, and half me went, my negative side went, I think I'm out of my depth here, all these players, as you say, Miller, McLeish, Jim Bett, Simpson, Ewers were all still there at the time, cup winners. The negative side of me says, I think I'm in the wrong place here. But then the positive side of me says, I want a bit of this, you know, I want to be part of this, because these are all top class players, and this is where I want to be.
Well, it wasn't a successful season, that first season. Second year in a row that Aberdeen had Rangers in the League Cup final. It was a 3-2 loss. David Rodds with the 2 goals for Aberdeen in that. Did you sense growing frustration, growing anger, or a growing kind of rivalry that you'd lost 2 years in a row?
I remember, I was in the first one, the second one, I was actually in the squad. I didn't get changed. I think I was 14th man or 15th man, whatever it was. I remember being in the dressing room that day, and they got beat 3-2. It was a great game, by the way. Dodgers scored 2. I remember I was at Hampden as well. I remember Alex Smith said to me there at that time, he said, "You'll be your turn next year," which is quite crazy how he knew that. But obviously getting beat in the second time, it must have been a bit frustrating. I couldn't really sense the moves, but I was just intrigued in how the game went and watching the crowd. And I remember thinking to myself, I'd love to have a bit of this, you know. So
you certainly did the next season. It was a kind of a settled team as well. There wasn't too many changes. Heelhouse was the kind of big signing of the 89-90 season, but he didn't come in until November from PSV. So you started the season really well in the league against Hibs. You scored yourself a 1-0 win. Had you worked out what your position was at that point?
No. I think when Alex Smith brought me over, he must have thought I was a right back. I think I did play one game at right back at Motherwell. And I had a nightmare because I was supposed to be a right back, just standing still as a right back. And obviously, Miller McLeish and I think Shute McKimmy went left back because David Robertson was injured. But I've never played, I was never a good tackler. A right back over in Holland, you run forward and help the attack. Right back in Scotland was different altogether, you know. So if I was going forward, leaving a lot of space. And obviously, I think it was, who's a winger? Paul Kinnard, I think it was. Yeah, so very, a lot of space for him anyway. I got hauled off at half time. That was a learning process. But I think it's a learning process for the manager as well, thinking, I'm not a right back, you know, I'm more of a midfielder. And I think when I was a young boy, I was an attacker scoring goals, really. So that would be my preferred position. So I think Alex Smith knew that after that game.
I mean, you were scoring regularly, a couple of goals in September in league as well. But the 16th of August, Albion Rovers away, Clifton Hill, ground I know very well in the League Cup. And 2-0 win, David Robertson and Van der Ark, another Dutch import. What are your memories of Willem?
That's when Big Willem came over. Yeah, he's just a big tall lad, you know, so he was always going to be an asset to any team because of his height. I remember thinking that, and obviously me and Theo being there, and maybe Alex Smith thought, so two good purchases, and maybe he went back, kept on going back up to Dutch League to buy more players, you know, so maybe he thought there's good value there and what have you. But Big Willem gives you another dimension, you know, to the team. Sometimes from off the bench, if you need a goal, a bit of Route 1 football or whatever. That was what Wilm was good for.
Had you played against him in Holland?
I think I had, yeah, once or twice. I think he played for, well, he played for three or four clubs in Holland. But it's funny because he's actually from Groningen where I played, but he never played for Groningen. But Wilm told me the story that we played together against each other for amateur teams when we were both in Holland, you know. So I played with him amateur football when I had that 1 year in amateur football.
I'm surprised you don't remember him when you're looking
at him. I'm 19, 20, I don't know. I can't understand. They're all tall in Holland, you know what I mean? So he wouldn't stick out in Holland, Wilm.
Well, one week later, and it was Airdrie in the League Cup, a 4-0 win there, and you get yourself in the score sheet twice. So had you started to get yourself into really advanced positions by that point?
I think I must have done, yeah. I think missed maybe, well, started to play midfield. Well, I played midfield before I played right back here, but midfield, that's where I favoured, like an attacking midfielder. That was the position I liked, you know. And obviously scoring goals. I'd always scored goals as a kid and what have you. And I was a striker as well, so I was always known for scoring goals. But yeah, that position suits me well.
Because you scored again the next round of the League Cup quarter-final against St Mirren. Bet also in the score sheet. David Winnie own goal. Is a kind of difficult question to ask for you, perhaps, because you came into Aberdeen a bit later, but did you sense it was kind of just business as usual, or was there excitement? Oh, we're getting into the semis of the cup.
No, I thought it was like business as usual. That's what I loved about it. Just like all the boys had been there before and done it. You know, it was a great, great feeling. Thought, come on, and I loved all that attitude. They wasn't like sort of getting excited, no, because they're used to it. They want to go as far as, well, they're used to winning cups, you know, so. Getting the semi-final wasn't a big deal, you know, so that was just normal ways for them, you know. So that's one thing I remember thinking, but I want to pass this because they're used to winning cups, you know, so it's a good feeling.
Was it a case of the dressing room at Aberdeen was the, I don't want to say disciplinary, but the when you would get a backside kicking after a bad result, was it more the dressing room that would remonstrate rather than the manager coming in?
Well, the top pro, like McLeish and Miller, they know we've had a bad game, or especially Alec McLeish, you know you haven't played well. But Jockey should tell you most of the time, yeah, you know you haven't played well. Even when you play well and you could have done better, they're still on it, yeah, which is great, you know what I mean? So you could win a game and still getting told, you did this wrong, you did that wrong, you know, so kept you on your toes all the time. You're never satisfied, even if it was a big victory or whatever. There's always something else you could have done better, you know?
So you get the easiest draw possible in the semi-final. Celtic at Hampden. I think I was actually at that game. I remember it pretty well. What are your memories of that semi-final victory?
I remember being a bit of sleet, a bit of a drizzle in the air. It was nice occasion, nice-ish weather, nice time to play football, but a bit of a drizzle, bit of a slippery surface. Or whatever. I remember that. Nice night. Obviously, a big crowd again. Lovely atmosphere and just the games you want to play in, really.
And 1-0 victory, and it was back to the final again. In October against Rangers, and it was third time lucky. What are your memories of taking on Rangers at Hampden and starting, being in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I just that's that was your aim in life, you know, to play a cup final, what have you. And you know what? I didn't think negative. Just so excitement. You know what's going to happen. You know they're a big team. They're a good team. But I know we were a good team, a big team as well. There wasn't much in it at all, so whoever performed on the day. So I was very, I don't know, what's the word there? Maybe you've got to be confident. I wasn't ever negative. I wasn't worried about their team at all. I thought if we play where we can play, we can beat anybody, you know. So I remember, yeah, so that was my thoughts going into the game.
When you were growing up as a kid, it was always going to be the FA Cup and the League Cup in England. You might not have focused as much on the games in Scotland, but when you were playing in those finals, was that like a crescendo for you? Was that an amazing moment?
It was, yeah, because as you say, growing up in England, there's always the FA Cup final and what have you. But this is exactly the same to me, just a big cup final, full stadium and what have you. That's what you dream of as a kid.
And it was a bit of a surprise in the starting lineup, a young Ian Jess lineup. What was the thinking behind that from what you heard at the time?
Yeah, I thought it was brave. I liked that. That's what I liked about Alex Smith and Jockey. They weren't scared to put young kids in, you know, at the deep end. And I must admit, I was surprised when he was on the bench. Sorry, Ian started. I thought he might have been on the bench and brought him on. But, you know, decisions like that makes you so much. We're not scared, you know, and they've got confidence in Ian as well. So I thought it was a great decision.
And you scored the opener with a particularly well-placed header.
Yeah. it all happened in slow motion when it came off the wall. Bobby Connor sent a crossing, well, what, like a looping cross, yeah. And then you're waiting for the ball's quite in the air for quite long, and you think, okay. And then you see Chris Wood sort of stranded. He was going to come, he did, and he sort of decided to go back. You think, all I thought at the time, I think Munro was marking me. Munro was marking me. I thought, all I've got to do is get me at this ball and I can score here. So that was it. So when the ball eventually came down, I remember thinking, this could be what I've been dreaming of all my life, you know. Split second, I thought, if I get me into this could be it, you know what I mean? So, and it went in, yeah.
And Rangers quickly countered. McQuist enacted his fall to the floor, shall we say, with Willie Miller beside him. Was it a penalty, Paul?
I don't know. I don't think so myself, because I think McQuist is very, very clever, and he backed into Willie. And the ref give it, you know. So I don't think it's a penalty now.
Would the VAR taking a close look at it?
I'm not sure about VAR now either. I don't think they're doing anything. Don't think they get it right neither anyway, do they? So I'm not a fan of VAR. I don't think it's a penalty now.
Who was more at risk from Willie's rap, McQuist or the referee?
I think it was the referee, wasn't it? Whoever's there. Yeah, I think the referee. Bloody yeah. I remember Willie. I think Willie. Remember the Hulk, when the Hulk used to get angry and go green and whatever. I thought, so Willie's going to do. His veins were going to pop out his neck when the referee gave the penalty, you know. So he had to hold himself back, I think, not to say do anything wrong. We obviously could have lost a man, he was going berserk with the referee.
I think McQuist is quite famous for letting you know during the course of the game if yes. anything happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Had you ever actually been on the wrong side of that? Had you ever had any kind of banter with McQuist? Or
no, I never. I know he's a good lad. I know that because Al McLeish are good friends of him and whatever. And I think I met him once or twice. He's a really nice lad, yeah. But I never know. I never got involved with all that, especially obviously he's a centre forward. I was never near him, but I can imagine the defenders and what the banter he'd give them, you know. So, but I never could come across any of it.
And then match goes into extra time. I remember one shot that saved by Woods, and the time seemed to slow. As the ball kind of trickled across the line, and then it just went out for a by kick, and then ball comes up to Van der Ark, flick on, Nicholas Leoff, and then it's down to you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, if you watch the game again, about 10 minutes earlier, there's another occasion, a very similar occasion where Charlie had the ball, and Charlie held the ball up, and obviously looking for someone to lay it off to come onto it and have a strike. And I wasn't there. And I got a rollicking off Jockey, because Jockey shouts off extra time, you're getting tired. He shouted, I should have been there. Oh, so I can see, I see this on the video. So 10 minutes later, same thing again. And this time, obviously, same thing happened. Charlie had the ball. I was there this time. So I put that down to Jockey bollocking me, because you're getting tired, you know, to go support the strikers every time. It's always a gamble. And you got so much energy, whatever. But I know for a fact, Jockey, if him shat me the first time 10 minutes ago, that made me get up there and be there on the end of the layoff from Charlie.
What was Charlie Nicholas like as a character?
He's a lovely guy, yeah, nice guy, friendly guy. Good professional. Really nice chap, yeah. Wasn't big headed at all, no, just down to earth and a likeable guy.
I think you must be the first person ever said Charlie's a good professional. I think his reputation in England, I'm not sure if that's just or not, but
I'm saying, well, a good fest, maybe not off the path, I don't know, but he's a nice lad on the park, he worked hard and whatever, so I had no problems with him.
And it wasn't just the League Cup that was going to be successful for Aberdeen that season as well, it's also success in the Scottish Cup. Again, you were on the score sheet against Partick Thistle in the third round. It was a 6-2 win. Van der Ark were a hat trick. And then Morton and Hearts were quickly dispatched. Hillhouse was on the score sheet, so Hillhouse had joined at that point. What are your memories of Hillhouse coming into the club?
I remember playing against him in Holland. He played for Den Bosch at the time, whatever. He's a great player then over there. He stood out over there, to be honest with you. So when we knew we signed him, I thought, so this is going to be a good sign for us, a good asset. And then his first game, I think Dunfermline, I think he scored. Scored 4, didn't he, in his first game, I think, or whatever. Unbelievable, what a start. But he's a top-class striker, and he was a really good footballer.
Did he kind of blend in well? Was there a good kind of assimilation of Dutch players into
it? Yeah, that made it easy. Good, Willem van der Ark, good friends with And then obviously Tao, myself, made it easy for him to settle in. A few Dutch lads there, so it was no problem for him. He's a quiet lad, Hansworth, nice, good player.
Well, it was Hearts in the quarterfinal and then Dundee United in the semi-final. Usually Dundee United games in the Cup with Aberdeen are absolute turgid, 0-0, has to go to replay. But this was 4-0. Neil Housie's best pal scoring for Aberdeen, Van der Hoorn.
Yeah,
own goal. One own goal.
Yeah.
And that was it, back into the final against Celtic. Why were you not in that final lineup? First of all, because I think you didn't start that game, did you? Oh no, you did. You did start that game. I apologise. You're substituted in that game. Sorry, that's what I was going to ask you. But that was it was a fairly strong Aberdeen team we put out in that cup final.
Yeah, it was. Well, the semi-final. Remember the semi-final against Dundee United? As you said, usually tight affairs. We actually went. We just run riot that day. It was just unbelievable. I remember the young Jess was playing. We just couldn't go wrong, you know. And we really sort of played our best football. Well, one of our best games of the season, I think, against them on the day. We went crazy. Good performance. But the actual final again. You think you're back at Celtic. You're back in the final against Celtic. Places you want to be and what have you. But what I remember of the game, it was a bit of a drab game, wasn't it? There wasn't much going on in the game, you know. So I remember that.
Yeah, 0-0 all the way through. Got into extra time as well. You were taken off in extra time.
Yes.
Was that Graham Watson? I think it was that came on for you.
Yeah.
Was that fatigue or was that Alex thinking about penalties at that point?
I think it was fatigue. I think I was tired. Alex will tell you different, but I think it was fatigue. I was getting tired. And again, it's good bringing a young lad on Graham Watson, you know, because maybe you're thinking, well, could be taking a penalty if it goes that far, you know. But I think I was tired myself. So even when it came off, I wasn't that bothered because I thought I didn't have much left in me, you know. So.
And it came down to penalties. I think this might have been the first penalty shootout in Scottish Cup history, certainly in the final. What were you like during the penalties? Could you watch?
I could watch, yeah. But all you're thinking of, you don't want any of your mates to sort of be the fall guy, you know. That was the main thing. Obviously, you want to win it. And the first five had gone, and we level after that. And you get other players, obviously you don't want to be taking penalties, starting to take them. And you just think, oh, bloody hell, if he misses it, God almighty. And then you see the young Graham Watson going up, oh, poor lad, if he misses it, I don't want him to be freaking burning them with that pressure, you know. That'd be end of his career before it's even started, you know. And when you see them all put them in, whatever, it's a good feeling, but then you still just want to win it. I don't care how you win it after that, as long as one of our players is in the fall guy, you know.
And Anton Rogan misses his penalty. Did Phil save it?
Tell Savior,
yeah, he did.
Left there
and up steps Brian Irvine with a chance to win the final. Are you sitting there thinking, he's going to be a panicker, or he's going to be top corner, he's going to find with a deft flick?
Well, funny thing about it, I'm in the dugout, so when the penalties are taken, or the players are all in the halfway line, obviously they decide when all the penalties are getting taken. So when the first five are taken there, so obviously the next players are going to 6th, 7th and 8th, no one wants to take them, so they walk back a bit, they back up a bit. Funny thing about it, when Brian came to take his, he was near the other goal, the 18-yard line, the other goal, that's how far back he'd walk back to say, I don't want to take one, you know what I mean? He's the last one to go. Basically, walking further and further back. Seriously, he was near the other goal, near the other thing, 18-yard box. But he said, he's got to go now, he's the last player, outfield player to take one. I didn't know what I thought, to be honest with you. I thought I was getting that far into the all the players getting taken. I'll tell you one thing I thought. I thought, what happens if we keep on scoring? Did he go round again? I even thought at one stage, seriously, at the time, because it hadn't been a cup final like it, or penalty shootout, I thought, what if we go back to the national subs? The subs are going to come back on and take one or whatever. I didn't have a clue what was going on, whether they go back round or not, you know. So, when Brian scored, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, you know. So, so great.
What are your memories of Brian? Because I think he maybe gets pigeonholed as just a no-nonsense centre-half, but there was a couple of games that I've seen him actually nearly score with kind of Pele bicycle kicks in games, which you wouldn't expect, but...
And I just found Brian a straightforward centre-half, you know. I didn't see him do many bicycles. I didn't see any bicycle kicks, to be honest with you. No, he's just a big, tough centre-half, I thought.
I think, I'm pretty sure it was against Clegg Bank.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure he hit the bar.
It was a
cup replay. We'll have to track him down.
Okay.
What are your memories then of Brian's penalty going in and was it just absolute chaos?
Yeah, I must remember, like, any penalty shootout, you just all run over to the goal scorer and obviously the keeper who saved the one before, Mayor from Rogan. Yeah, just elation, isn't it? You know, again, it's a great feeling, you know. Win the cup and all your fans are happy again, you know, and your family's in the crowd watching it. It's just a great feeling. But we've done it once, you do it twice, but yeah, this is I like this. I want more of this, you know.
What happens once that trophy's lifted and you go back in the dressing rooms? Do you go to a different bit of Hampden, into a players' lounge, meet the opposition, or are you just kind of whisked straight away into a variety of parties and functions?
I think it's right, because you're celebrating in the dressing room. It's a long celebration as well. After that, I don't remember going to any players, or I think it's right back on the bus, right back to your hotel where you carry on with the celebrations, you know. That's what I remember of it anyway.
Did any experienced professionals give you advice about your medal and how not to lose it?
No, I remember going up, I thought it was the first one, maybe the first one, and Willie going up Hampden. Obviously, Willie's done it a few times before, a lot before, and the first time I've done it, been up there, and he says, enjoy everything, take it slowly and enjoy. I'll never forget that. He said, take it slowly and enjoy, because obviously it goes so quick. I remember them words from Willie. That's what's come back to me now. Yeah, take it slowly and take it all in and enjoy, he says, you know, so.
When you were going into the following season, 1991, there's always a risk of a kind of a hangover. You've won the cup, but perhaps kind of egos get too big or too confident. Were you allowed to get carried away, or was it very much business as usual?
I think business as usual. I never felt that way at all. Certainly never. The players you got on your team, again, Jim Bett, top class lad as well. McLeish, there's no one sort of, no big heads there in any fancy dance. You know, just all down to earth lads. You just thought business as usual. Yeah, no one even thought about whatever. We knew we had to keep on working and hopefully results come again.
Well, it was a reasonable start to the 1990 season. Three wins, a couple of draws, but then it was a game against St Johnston where the wheels kind of fell off the bus. It was a 5-0 kind of thrashing in that game. There's been lots of kind of conspiracy theories about what went on, what didn't go on. What are your memories of actually what went wrong that day?
I don't remember. Where was that? I said Johnson or Aberdeen, I can't remember.
It was at McDermott Park.
And I was playing?
I'm not sure. I'm not accusing him.
That's why I don't remember. Yeah. I'm not sure even if I was playing or not. If I was, I don't remember getting beat 5-0, but it's not something in me, it's S in me, but I don't remember whether I was playing or not. If I was playing, I still don't remember. Not saying it's whose fault it was, but I can't remember playing.
There was a lot of kind of, I don't want to say controversy, there was a lot of media attention because it was seen as a huge shock at that time. Aberdeen was such a big club. And the form had dipped off by kind of January time, but looked like Rangers were winning the league. But then from the 2nd of February onwards, Aberdeen just went on a massive unbeaten run all the way down. I mean, they beat Rangers during that run as well. Controversial goal at Ibrox that Souness was very unhappy about, a quick free kick.
Yeah.
But Aberdeen just kept going. And the 11th of May, the last game of the season, it was a game at Ibrox, and Aberdeen could win the league if they won that match.
Yeah.
It was a very kind of sore day for any Aberdeen fans. Was it a particularly hard day for a player at the club?
Yeah, it was. Because I remember I was like, what happened that year? I was out of contract. The manager wants me to sign another contract, and I wasn't ready. I would have signed it if no one else came in, but I said to the manager at the time, my ambition was I'd love to play in England as well. So I was just being honest with him. Said, listen, Gaffy, I'd rather play in England, but if no one comes in, I'm happy. I've had 3 great years at Aberdeen. I'd loved every minute of it. If nothing happens down south, I'll come back. I'll play again, no problem at all. So Alex Smith kept me in and out of the team that year, whatever, for his own reasons. And I played once or twice. I came in, I think the second last game against Motherwell. I played a few games anyway. So the final game of the season comes where we, as you say, we went on a run. It was unbelievable. We won, I don't know, 10, 12 games or whatever. We never got beaten. We caught Rangers up. I mean, level on points on the final day. So a draw would be the better goal difference. A draw would have done us. Yeah, so the final game of the season, because I was in and out of the team, I played the one before, I think. I wasn't sure if I'd be playing or, you know, so I was a bit disappointed when I wasn't playing that day. But are you still trying to motivate the lads? I'd love to go and win this medal, the Premier League medal. all the young lads are there, Jess and what have you, trying to keep them, you know, get them motivated and what have you. So it was a big, one of the biggest disappointments. A, for me not playing, I wanted to play, and B, not getting the point we needed, you know, for the league.
I think now when you look back at it, I think a couple of times Heatley kind of has challenges in Michael Watt, who was replacing Snelders in goal.
Yeah.
And nowadays, modern football, I think the referee would have blown for a free kick possibly.
Yeah.
And you obviously can't compare different eras, but it was definitely tough.
Mm.
And it didn't help the next season. Jockey and Alex eventually kind of moved on. I think Jockey a bit earlier than Alex. What was your take on that season in 91-92, Jockey and Alex going?
Yeah, I think it was a bit unfair really, because I think we had a few bad results beginning of that season, and I don't think the crowd gave him much time, Alex Smith, because he used to success, and then once season started, didn't do stuff very well, which happens in football. But I think the crowd started getting on the manager's back. I think what happened then, I think Willie Miller was the reserve coach as well at the time, so I think that had a lot to play, part to play with the crowd showing for, then with the managers not doing this and that. It happens all the time with managers, obviously. It's a hard game. But I think that, I think myself, maybe I'm biased because Alex Smith, I have no respect for, and he brought me over to the club. I thought he didn't give him enough time, to be honest with you, to try and rectify things. And if Jockey's left early and whatever, things were starting to go pear-shaped. Well, I suppose that happens in football, you know. But I thought he was hard done by Alex Smith going that early, you know, after the, well, wasn't that far into the season, was it?
I once took a wrong turn at Falkirk Stadium and walked into Alex Smith's office by mistake with him sitting in there.
Did you?
And I said, hello. And I had to walk back out again.
Did you?
He was totally confused.
Was he?
But I signed a centre defender. But you mentioned Willie Miller. Willie came in. He did a good job. You could argue maybe too early for somebody. You'd want them to have more of a kind of starting off at a smaller club and working up. But the season Willie was in full charge, you played in a lot of those games, but both cup finals were lost to Rangers, and it was a second place finish in the league to them. Aberdeen would take that as a successful season now, but back in those days there was still a lot of, I don't want to say entitlement, but the fans definitely felt they should be competing for trophies.
Yeah, I think it died off a bit when Willie, I went back, I signed 2 more years, and then under William, whatever. I can't remember there. We got to the finals. I mean, I don't know whether the belief was there at the same time or what, or whether we had the same sort of team where we scared of nobody, whether we had the same mentality, I'm not too sure, to be honest with you. It was different manager, different team. I remember going to the cup final, what have you. I remember getting beat by Rangers the second, I think that. My last game for Aberdeen when we got beat 2-1 by Rangers. There wasn't the same, I don't know, atmosphere in the dressing room, I don't think, you know, whether with the belief in what wasn't there, I don't think.
Well, in 1993, Ipswich and John Lyle came calling. How did that move come about?
Yeah, I think they were watching that game there, Hampden. I think I was playing right midfield, Stevie Wright was right back. And got a phone call the next day on a Monday. And it'd always been my dream to go to England, and I flew down to London with met John Lyle, yeah, and he showed me around Ipswich and what have you, and I didn't think twice again, because I wanted to play in England, you know, and do a Premiership club, which made it even better. I'd been playing all the big grounds, which I wanted to since I was a kid, so I didn't think twice again. They gave me a 3-year contract, and I was happy because I was 29 years of age at the time, so I thought my chance, to be honest with you, playing in England had gone, because I tried to get away 2 years before. That's when I thought, I'm 27 in my prime. If I don't go now, I mightn't go to England at all, you know. So when I tried, when I came back to Scotland for 2 years, I thought maybe that finished my career in Scotland, you know. So when it came, the chance again, I was quite, quite happy.
And John Wark was part of that squad, a kind of Scottish icon for a variety of reasons. What are your memories of John?
He's a good mate of mine. I'll see him again next week when I go down for the reunion, you know. So he's had a few nights in Liverpool with me as well. I'll obviously play for Liverpool. He's a good lad, yeah. He's a legend up there, you know. So he's had a few goals. I just think he went away. He retired. He came back down just to train with him when he got a contract again, you know. So he's going to be 38. Became a centre half near the end. But yeah, top class player, yeah. Good player.
And it was a season in the Premier League. I think it was just the infancy, just a couple of years old the Premier League was at that point.
I think it was the second year, yeah. When I went there in 93, I think it was starting in 92, I went in 93, yeah. That was second season Premiership, yeah.
Was there any moments you can think of when you thought, I'm going to have to pinch myself here, I can't believe this?
I don't know. I think later, in a year when you go and play at Anfield and Goodison as well, I'm an Everton fan. And you go places like that and you're playing. I just found it very surreal, you know, the place you used to go and watch football. You're playing on these big grounds, you know, so I loved every minute of it.
How are you received by the Ipswich fans? Because I don't think there's a bad word to be said about you at Pittodrie. Was it the same at Portman Road?
I think eventually, yeah. When I first got to Ipswich again, no one knows who you are. You're playing. I started off well at Ipswich. I scored on my debut. And then about 4 or 5 games in, I got injured, I think against Chelsea. I never played for a while. I've never had injuries in my career. Not big ones, but I had injuries for 3 or 4 weeks. That was it. But then once you get a bit later, a bit older, I got a few injuries on Ipswich. So that didn't help me cause sometimes. I never played regularly. Then we had one season in the Premiership, then we were down the third division, whatever. So it was a bit like topsy-turvy. But you seen the best of me when I was maybe about 32 in the first division. I was playing regularly again then, and I was scoring goals as well. So I think you've seen the best of me then.
Well, George Bully took over in 95 as manager. And then in 96, 97, you were the top scorer for Ipswich that season. What were your memories of George coming in as manager? Because he's obviously he was Scotland manager, but he was also manager of Hearts with one of the worst sackings in Scottish football history, with even off getting rid of him when Hearts were top of the league.
Yeah, unbelievable.
What's your memory of George as a manager?
When George came to Ipswich, he's quite new. I think he just starts off at Colchester, which is his first one, I think. I'm not sure if he did in one of Scotland before then, but yeah, I think Colchester was his main one, first one. Then he went to Ipswich, did very well, but he's a young manager, obviously learning the ropes, especially in the Premiership. I think one of his learning curves, one of the first games he was in charge of, early games, was Man United at Old Trafford. And I think he went out there, Man United, the best team in the league at the time, and he played offensively, played our, you know, to our strengths, whereas against Man United, you should have, like Man City now, you should have 10 men behind the ball, I think, in hindsight now, but he went there very positively, and we got a hammering, you know, so I think that was a bit of an eye-opener. But he's a young manager, learning the ropes and what have you, and he's a legend at Ipswich anyway, he's a player there. And eventually he did very well.
Yeah, and unfortunately though, Ipswich got relegated. A couple of playoff attempts that weren't successful to get them back up, and then it was retirement for yourself. Why did you feel ultimately it was time for you to get out of playing?
I think I'd had my last 2 years, like a year contract each time. So, you know, obviously I haven't got long left. So, and then I got an injury. When did I get injured? I got my Achilles. It wasn't that bad, I just thought. I broke my hand, actually, one of the early games of the season. I was up for 4 weeks with my hand, and then I got back just running around a field. And when I was running around a field, no one near me, just felt my Achilles. Anyway, long story short, it's just like wear and tear over the years and what have you. They never snapped, but it was on the way to snapping. I went to see a specialist or whatever, and he said, you need an operation, but you're out for 9 months. So basically, when you're out for 9 months at 34 years of age, there's no really coming back because you're not, you know. Ipswich Town, my contract finished in June. They let me get fit. I think I got fit about September, so 3 months over. You seen I was fit. And now George Bailey said, listen, Paul, you can go get another club if you want or whatever. That's it. I knew that was going to happen anyway because obviously it's taking me like 6, 7 months, 8 months to get fit. And then it was like sort of go back to the lower leagues. I went to Gillingham, Northampton, wanted to sign me to come down, have a look and have a little test game and what have you. Basically looking at your fitness. My fitness was okay. But I remember going down to there. I think we played one game at Northampton and it was just like being on the motorway. The ball was in the air all the time, you know, so I thought... My dad was alive at the time. I'm thinking packing in, Dad. I don't want to go down the level because I was going to get kicked all over the show. My body's feeling ravaged anyway. So it was time to go, you know. So I was 35 and it was time to call it a day.
Had you prepared for life after football by this point?
Yes, because when you're 34 again, you have an injury. You're out for 9 months. Your contract's finished at you anyway. So you've got time to think, you know, this could be it, you know. 35 is a good age to finish when I did finish anyway. You're never ready. You see, you're ready. You're never ready, you know, really. Like, because you don't know what's next. I haven't got a clue what's next. I was never going to be a coach. I wasn't going to go down that route. I was always hoping to move back up north, which eventually we did.
And do you still have an interest in your former clubs? You still keep an eye out for Aberdeen?
Yes, very much so. Yeah, I've been back to Aberdeen a few times over the years. Well, yeah, a lot really. I still watch and see what the results are with Evian. And obviously, a few lads, Terrell and Willem, they text all the time about it as well. But it's not going very well at the moment. It's sad to see, really.
What do you think when you sit back of a night, kind of a nice glass of whiskey or wine or whatever it is you like to get it and imbue yourself with, or your football, of course, it could just be water in an early bed. what makes you look back and chuckle most in your career? Just some of the funny moments you think when you've got a quiet personal time and reflection?
There's so many to remember, you know. You can't remember them all at once, but then someone brings up a story up and you see different players and you remember this story and what have you. A few laughs with David Robertson, he was quite funny. We had the same sense of humour. I can't remember anyone in particular, but when you go, I remember about 10 when you go, obviously, but when you're there on the spotlights, I don't really can't think of any, but yeah, lots of laughs, yeah, loads of memories. That's what you miss, to be honest with you, the camaraderie, you know, and the players' lounge and the laughs on the buses and what have you. Bobby Connors, Jim Betts, all very, 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 very funny guys, you know, very funny. You miss all that. But that's it. Life goes on.
Well, on that bombshell brings us to another episode at the end. My thanks to Paul Mason for making me a very happy Dons fan in the early 90s and being a superb guest 35 years in the future. I don't know if you know, it's 35 years in the future. 35 years, but Paul, thank you very much.
Totally enjoyed it. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.